Puck drop is 8 o'clock tonight on 680 News as the Leafs and Columbus Blue Jackets play the third game of their best of five series from the NHL bubble. Joe Bowen will have the call of the game. Again, it'll be on 680 News to start. We on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, will pick it up immediately following the Braves and Jays game, the conclusion of that game. And then, of course, as always, Leafs Nation postgame with Elberg and Stelic will follow the conclusion of the Leafs game. Joe Bowen is the radio voice of the Leafs, joins us on Writer's Block. Joe, I trust you're doing well.
We are. We're not in the bubble, but we're going to be sort of in a bubble down at Rogers Sportsnet tonight, getting our game on from a lovely, a tastefully appointed booth.
There you go. There you go. We all do what we have to do in this time, my friend.
You got that right. You got that right. Thank God the LCBO never closed.
There you go. Well, we, you know, you're I can tell you this, that the priorities of the Bowen household strangely match the priorities of the Blair household.
Well, you know, sometimes you just have to get your priorities in a row and get them in order, and that worked out fine.
So there you go.
Now that we've got hockey back, though, we've curtailed that. So that we haven't had as many happy hours.
No. Yeah. Before we ask you about the Leafs and the Jackets, I was just thinking of this because I've got the Canucks Wild game on. And as I said, they're beating the hell out of each other right now. Every time I look up, I see somebody, you know, being carted over to the bench or hunched over going to the bench. I just want to ask you your thoughts on the type of hockey we've seen in the bubble. I can't say enough about the intensity of it. I swear to God, this is like, it's like a Stanley Cup playoffs for me. It really is.
Well, it is.
Well, that's true.
Just to let you know, it's been in all of the papers. It is the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you're right. And you know what? It's a real testament to the athletes. It's a testament to our sport, and it's a testament to know that these guys are at a position in their season where they are not being paid. I mean, they get paid very well, obviously, and they get paid for a regular season. But the playoffs and that trophy means more to them than you know, money at this point anyway. And so I think that's why we see this. It's inherent to the game, and it's something to be very proud of, I think. And it's I agree with you. I mean, it has been very competitive, very emotional, and very high tempo. And for those who thought that it might not be because of the extenuating circumstances, I think they have been proven wrong.
Joe, what impact do you expect the absence of Jake Muzzin will have on the game tonight?
Well, let's hope not too dramatic, but, you know, he's a key component, a veteran guy, an experienced guy, a Stanley Cup champion. It's great that he is back with his team, which will mean at least he can be in the room and various other things. But the on-ice thing is going to have to be divided up by six or seven other players, depending on whether Sheldon Keefe decides to dress seven defensemen tonight, as has been a rumor. We'll find out during the pregame warm-up, but that may in fact be the case, at which point his minutes will be eaten up by committee. And, you know, they're going to have to do that. They had a winning record when Muzz was out of the lineup during the course of the year. They're going to have to see if they can't rally and win a couple of games so that he can get back into this tournament when the actual Stanley Cup playoffs start, as opposed to the qualifying round that we're in.
You know, Joe, one of the things I thought was really noticeable in game two, right from jump, was the change in the front two lines or the top two lines of the Leafs, how they both, it seemed to have an impact on both lines. And I want to ask you, who do you think, when those lines are juggled or when those lines are mixed up, who do you think benefits more, John Tavares or Mitch Marner?
It's hard to say. They're both very, very obviously talented players, and they can both complement whoever they happen to be playing with. John Tavares is a guy that goes to the front of the net. He has more shots from the slot area than any Leaf. I believe it's 10 in the first two games. He's going to be a guy that looks to get the puck there, whether it's coming from Willie Nylander or Mitch Marner, it really doesn't matter. Austin Matthews, I think, works well with both, but I think that Marner certainly has an ability to find him and get him the puck. I think at this particular point, you're hoping that Mitch Marner is going to start finding the back of the net and getting points as well, because that hasn't happened as yet. But you know what? It's a situation for the coach that is a real blessing. He can move these parts around all over as far as the first two lines are concerned and really not miss a beat. They've played with each other a lot, whether it's on the power play or whether it's in a situation where they have mixed up the lines. And so Sheldon Keefe has a real advantage, and we'll watch to see how that is played out here when he doesn't have last change. And if he wants to get away from Werenski and Jones, he can mix and match and do some some interesting things to give Mr. Tortorella a little something to think about.
Joe, you're at a point in your career where you've been presented a challenge, a broadcasting challenge, and I'm sure you never would have expected. What has been for you calling these games the most challenging, and what are some of your observations about calling games where the crowd has no impact? That, as a viewer, for me, remains surreal, to be honest.
It is. It's very different. And yet, the guys at both studios where we have worked have done a great job of getting us a number of views, a number of different camera angles, something that we would not be privy to during a regular season if it was just a regular game and we had to do it at home as opposed to traveling to Columbus, say. Where you would just get the game cam and whatever was on TV, you would get that. So this it's helped a lot for us to do it under these circumstances because the NHL is providing us with more visual material on site. And that has been beneficial. But it's very different without the crowd. I don't think there's any question about that. We have to try to engineer the intensity and the excitement and things of that nature while doing it in a studio. And, we're trying to recreate it as best we can. And we hope that we have at least done a decent job at it, but it is very different. And you're right. I've never done this before, and it's been a bit of a challenge, but you know what? The alternative of having nothing, we'll take it.
You know, it was interesting hearing Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez talk last night about home run calls and just how, you know, when you do play-by-play, you are conditioned to certain things. You look at an outfielder and his reaction to know whether or not that 50-50 home run's going to go. You look at the umpires to know whether or not that 50-50 home run's going to go. All of that stuff. Crowd noise aside, like, are there visual cues that you use in person during a game that you've noticed now are just, you know, hard to kind of feed off of?
What has been interesting, and we certainly saw it in game one when Alex Kerfoot, or an exhibition game and Alex Kerfoot scored, the glass bangers behind the net.
Yes.
But be standing up and pounding, and even if the goal light came on at a later time, you would have known that it was in. But even Kerfoot didn't know it was in, and so that in itself was sort of in a microcosm. Oh, okay, that's different. that was something that was there. I mean, it's interesting to watch teams that have a boisterous and vocal and noisy home ice advantage. And I'm thinking of the Chicago Blackhawks, for one, and how they have to recreate or at least self-motivate themselves without that. And, you know, a lot of buildings, when their team gets down, they try to rally them, unlike Toronto or a lot of Canadian cities that are more reactive instead of being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
That's different. Now, everybody can kind of be the devil's advocate here and say, well, then the Leafs must really think this is great. There's no one screaming at them or telling them how horrible they are because they're only winning 3-1 and this guy let in that. It can be a difficult crowd, and you would hear those comments. Well, now, you're not hearing anything. It's other than your own teammate or maybe a loud mouth from the opposition who has decided to chirp you throughout the course of the game.
Joe, one of the interesting things about the series, and there's many, is sort of stylistically who dictates the kind of style they want to play. Game one clearly was more of a Columbus-style game. Game two certainly was a Leafs game. What do you expect tonight? Jeff and I spent the opening segment, and I think we sort of went back and forth saying we think the Leafs will win, but we don't have the great feel perhaps like we did for game two. What about you?
Well, it obviously has been played the way the Columbus Blue Jackets want to play. Limited scoring opportunities, low scoring hockey games, keep the game nothing or close as long as you can. The deal with the Maple Leafs, I think, is to make the Columbus Blue Jackets chase the game, something that they are not good at and are not equipped to be good at because of their lack of offense and offensive talent, most of which left them during the offseason, and to make them change the way they play because of the score in the game. And I think we saw that where Zach Werenski took more chances offensively. He's one of their premier offensive talents. He had 20 goals this year, which is more than most of their forwards. And so he gets trapped a couple of times, and the Leafs counter and are able to score because of it. So I think that's one of the things that we have to look forward to, and I'm sure that's what the Leafs are thinking. Get the first goal, make them chase the game, but don't do it at the expense of opening up too much and giving them a softie. So I think we're in for probably a little more of the same that we've seen in the first two games. I think it'll be low scoring, and it'll probably be a goal or two difference when the final buzzer goes. God, I hope they don't have that cannon already organized. Do they? Are they going to have that?
Some of the added effect. Look, I understand what you're trying to do, but Joe, there are some of the added effects that I just I'm not missing. you know what I mean? There are some things I'm just not missing. The train horn, I having it back, I was kind of hoping that they could maybe do away with that. But anyway.
You just don't want to have fun. Well, that's the problem with you guys.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Ralphie and I were down in Columbus for the All-Star game a couple of years ago. I think there was about 27 goals scored, and they ran out of ammunition with the cannon because they were shooting it off every time the puck went into that. I said, never mind Civil War and having the Blue Jackets and the Union Army and their own cannon. I said, I thought we were right in the middle of Gettysburg, for God's sakes.
Well, you guys have done a great job. And I would say keep it up, but I don't have to because I know you will. Bonesy, thanks for doing this, man.
My pleasure, guys, and hopefully we'll be talking about a win tomorrow.